On this edition of Jazz Profiles, it's a tribute to trumpeter Doc Cheatham. He passed away in 1997 after this show was produced.
He was there when Louis Armstrong was there. He was there when Roy Eldridge was there. He was there when Dizzy was there. He was there when Miles was there. He was there when Clifford Brown was there. He was there. He is jazz history.
He's hip. He's very relaxed. He has very good ears, and he comes to swing and play. He just puts you in touch with the spirit that the musicians had in Louis Armstrong's generation.
He's a phenomenon. That's the word Buck Clayton used about him, as a trumpet player. There's never been another trumpet player to last so long and play so well. If you heard him over the radio and didn't know who he was, you'd think he was 40 today playing the trumpet.
When you hear Doc Cheatham, you're listening to jazz history. Now in his early 90s, he has lived through all the eras of the music, and he's still going strong. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles. On this show, we celebrate the life and music of trumpeter Doc Cheatham. There may be other high-spirited nonagenarians around who remember hearing the great Ma Rainey when she came to town. But Doc not only heard her, Doc played for her. A top lead trumpeter for over 30 years, he played with Sam Wooding, McKinney's Cotton Pickers, Cab Calloway, Teddy Wilson, and many others. When the music changed in the 1950s and big bands were on the wane, Doc taught himself to play Latin rhythms and went to work with Marcelino Guerra, Machito, and Perez Prado. In his 60s, he decided to refashion himself into a master soloist and improviser. His horn tells story after story. Like an actor changing makeup and costumes, Doc's trumpet takes on unique color and character with each tune. Jazz historian Phil Schapp.
He reflects an ability to exhibit the earliest sounds and concepts of jazz with an authority that will never again be duplicated.
Chuck Foles, pianist in Doc's working band.
His ears are always open. He has his own way of playing, but he's a great listener, both in music and words. And he's very much attuned to the life around him at all times.
His playing evolved over a lifetime. For Doc, his style defies definition. Doc Cheatham.
I played in so many bands all my years, and every one of the bands are different. It had something to do with the different styles playing. Seems like they all at once came together and developed one particular style.
Trumpeter John Faddis.
The style that you play in is how you get from one note to the next. Doc can play the most forceful, brassy staccatos. But also the legato smooth passages. One one of the amazing things about Doc is his sound. Even at 91, he has a very, very brassy sound. But yet it can be soft and delicate like the petal of a rose.
Hearing Doc Cheatham play is always a joy. Seeing him live leaves an indelible image. Wynton Marsalis.
First, he's a gentleman. So when you meet Doc, he's always polite and cool. He likes to wear them little hats and his check pants. I love the way Doc holds his horn. Like, he holds his horn up high in a very clarion fashion.
Doc and his wife have lived on the Upper East Side of Manhattan since 1965. The walls of his apartment are lined with memorabilia and photographs, many of family, and equally as many of an old friend, Louis Armstrong. Traffic, sirens, horns, and bells of freight elevators are a constant cacophony. But despite the street noise, Doc seems to hear only music, especially the words to songs he likes to sing.
Okay, baby, sweet as can be. Okay, baby, wait till you see. I have a habit of, when I sleep, going over lyrics. But when I walk on the street and I think, and when I'm doing nothing, I have a habit of going over lyrics. Get in the bathtub, sit in the bathtub, I go over lyrics. If your mother wished to live with us three, it's okay, baby, with me.
Adolphus Anthony Doc Cheatham was born in Nashville, Tennessee on June 13, 1905.
My father's father was a Choctaw Indian. He escaped from Oklahoma when the government found oil on the land. Not only he, but all of the Indians that could escape, escaped. Some were shot and some were run out. And my father's father escaped and traveled somewhere, like on a boat or something. He landed in the state of Tennessee.
His grandfather settled in Cheatham County, named for the man who took him in. Doc grew up in Nashville, a city with fine institutions like Fisk and Meharry Medical College. But Nashville wasn't much of a town for jazz in those years. Nevertheless, the young Doc, who got his name because he played in the Meharry Medical College band, did have a chance to learn something about jazz. But he had to do it on his own.
I was 13 or 14 years old when my father, he was a barber, and he brought me a cornet and a saxophone, gave it to me, and I had no teacher, so I tried it for long, both of them for a period of time until I learned to control the keys and the notes and the sound of the instruments, because those instruments sound very bad if you didn't know how to play them. It took me maybe about a couple of years to learn to handle both instruments at the same time.
One thing Nashville did have, though, was the Bijou Theater. And at an early age, Doc began to play in the pit band there.
Bijou was one of the most beautiful theaters you ever want to see. It was a small radio city, but it was very old, but beautiful. And they gave that over to the black people there because the white people left the theater and went downtown and built better theaters for those people.
At the Bijou, Doc was exposed to many of the great artists on the TOBA circuit. Blues queens like the great Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith, and the talented instrumentalists like trumpeter Joe Smith, who traveled with them. Doc, too, was becoming part of the circuit.
Being in the pit, I played with these bands because they liked the idea of another horn in that group. So that's why when they came to the Bijou Theater, they would all invite me to join them on their travels. They would go around Kentucky and Indiana and Georgia and all around the circuit.
But life on the TOBA was hard.
You never got paid on the TOBA, never. You get handouts, you know, you get a draw, they call it. But you would never get paid, and so you couldn't come back home because you didn't have the money to come back home with. So you had to eat the best you could. It was rough.
It gave Doc the opportunity to travel, but often the musicians got stranded on the road. On one trip to Chicago, with pianist-arranger Mary Lou Williams, Doc never got paid by the man who managed the band.
So I just hung out in a railroad station in Chicago till I found my way, decided to start a walker. That was one of the best things that ever happened to me because I learned to wash dishes in restaurants, and I learned to work in pickle factories.
It was in Chicago in 1926 that Doc made a new friend.
That's where I met Louis Armstrong, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Both Louis Armstrong and his wife Lil Hardin Armstrong helped Doc get work in Chicago, where Al Capone controlled the music employment scene.
Well, I wasn't allowed to play in Chicago unless I was a musician from New Orleans.
Lil asked Doc to work with her on the outskirts of town, and then brought Louis in to hear him at the Dreamland. Eventually, Louis asked Doc to substitute for him at the Vendome, where his big feature was a tune called Poor Little Rich Girl.
He invited me to play for him, because he was working so hard at the theater that he wanted to take a day off. And I substituted for him two or three times. It was hard to do it because he was such a great player. Because I knew I was not capable, but I was young, and I listened to what he was doing at the theater several times. I learned what he played. That's where I got my help from. And from there on, if he could help me any way he could, he would. That's why I got rid of the saxophone, and I bought the trumpet, just like he bought. I was copying him. Whatever he did, I did.
Doc still is very, very fond of Louis Armstrong, who helped him when he was very young in Chicago at a very early age, and still, I think, continues playing some of the Louis Armstrong repertoire for people. For those of you that don't know, Louis Armstrong played some of the most difficult music on the trumpet that's ever been played in history. And Doc being able to continue that even at 91 years of age is something that's very special.
On his 1993 album, The 87 Years of Doc Cheatham, Doc paid tribute to Louis Armstrong with this version of Muskrat Ramble.
That old muskrat kept rambling around, great big tail dragging the ground. He looked at me and he started to frown, so I had to knock him down. But I bought a trap and I put it in the weeds, knocked him to his knees. I heard him groan and I heard him moan, that old muskrat had gone.
That was Doc Cheatham playing Muskrat Ramble, recorded in 1993. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, a celebration of the life and music of trumpeter Doc Cheatham. Self-taught on cornet and saxophone as a child, and now since knowing Louis Armstrong, firmly committed to the trumpet, Doc continued to learn more from professional musicians along the way, and eventually he also learned to read music.
I learned how to read in Atlantic City in 1924 because I was fired out of a job out there because I couldn't read. A woman piano player taught me how to read. I was so quick learning to read, I couldn't believe it. The lead part, That's what they gave me, and I read all the lead parts.
Over the next 30 years, Doc Cheatham would take his place in the lead trumpet chair in half a dozen important orchestras. During the 1930s and 40s, the lead trumpet was one of the main ingredients of an orchestra. John Faddis.
The trumpet as an instrument is one that typically takes the lead in an ensemble, whether it's a small group or big band. When one is playing lead trumpet in a big band, the first thing you have to have is a sound that everyone can hear. The other musicians in the band cannot follow you if they can't hear you. That's the first thing.
Like Louis Armstrong, Doc also strove to have a beautiful sound on his trumpet. Mason Johnson, trumpeter and Doc's first cousin.
When you began playing in the 30s and the 40s, your main objective for playing is to have a beautiful sound, a beautiful tone, regardless how many notes you play. If you didn't play but three notes, those three notes are supposed to sound big and beautiful and pretty.
Wynton Marsalis.
When you're playing lead trumpet, you always are playing those lip-splitting notes. And it's hard to play an upper register on the trumpet because you're building up all that air pressure in your brain. You have a tendency to want to black out. And for the older trumpet players back in the days of vaudeville, when they had to play all of these shows, it's unbelievably demanding work physically. I think the main thing that all those years of playing lead gave Doc was a very strong constitution. Because if it doesn't kill you, you're definitely going to come out a lot stronger.
In 1928, Doc joined Sam Wooding's band and traveled to Europe, where the unit stayed for 3 years. The band did one recording date in Barcelona in 1929. The equipment was so primitive and the weather so hot, they had to put ice cubes on the wax to keep it hard enough to finish the session. One of the tunes they recorded that day was Bullfoot Stump. That was the Sam Wooding Orchestra with Doc Cheatham playing lead trumpet on Bullfoot Stump. While he was in Europe, Doc Cheatham continued to expand his musical horizons and to teach himself harmonies.
I practiced harmonies every morning for 3 years, all kind of harmonies. That made me play better and hear better than playing just one set of harmonies, like you just play a C. If you play a song just in C, with the key of C, It's nothing. But you've got to know more about the key of C. You've got to know the D and E and F and G and the minors and the majors and chromatics. And that's what I taught myself.
He also heard some recordings by McKinney's Cotton Pickers.
And I said to myself, while I was over there with Sam, someday I'm going to join that band. And I got busy in writing things, different styles of little things. And I never had an idea I would ever come back to America again and join a band like that. and I did.
McKinney's Cotton Pickers were led by Don Redman, who left and was replaced by Benny Carter.
Doc Adolphus Cheatham. Every now and then I'm inclined to pick up a trumpet. I don't have much time to devote to practicing, so I sort of don't play it much these days. But this was my real inspiration for the instrument, and whatever note I might play when I pick up that instrument today is on the same mouthpiece that he gave me in 1932. Right? I haven't changed mouthpieces for over 50 years, and we were playing at the Arcadia Ballroom. Was that at 53rd Street and Broadway? And Doc was playing the lead trumpet, and beautifully as only he still can, but he didn't call himself a jazz player. For many years, he wasn't aware of what he could do, but we all know now, and we love it, don't we?
All right, guys. An old friend of Doc's, Carter brought him into the band. One of Doc's favorite tunes was Peggy.
Don Redman was the composer of that song. It had a certain beat to it, a certain swing to it.
Pianist Chuck Foles.
That's one of those happy tunes that seems perfect, seems to have been written for him, although it wasn't. The way he sings with that kind of rise, fall, that questioning in his voice, that kind of song is perfect for him.
You know I love you so, Peggy. I will never let you go. You know you came to me and filled my heart with ecstasy. And now I know that there's no other girl for me. So, Peggy, hurry and name the day, and we'll call the preacher man right away. He'll make certain you're mine forever. Peggy, don't you know I love you so?
Just ahead, Doc Cheatham joins the Cab Calloway Orchestra. I'm Nancy Wilson. It's Jazz Profiles, a celebration of the life and music of trumpeter Doc Cheatham from NPR, National Public Radio. In 1931, Doc took over the lead chair in Cab Calloway's orchestra at the Cotton Club. He stayed for 9 years.
I couldn't afford to make a mistake. No musician in that band was afford to make a mistake, but me especially. I couldn't make one mistake in that band. Cab was very strict, but he wasn't mean. But he knew what he wanted. All of his dance tunes were very fast.
Doc was impressed by the arrangements in the band, particularly those by Eddie Barefield and Eugene Cedric. Calloway also bought arrangements from Benny Carter, Fletcher Henderson, and others. Every once in a while, Doc even had a chance to solo, as he did in 1933 on Scat Song. But the hours in the Calloway Orchestra were rough. The unit would play 6 or 7 shows a day and sleep underneath the stage on cots. Eventually, the lifestyle took its toll on Doc.
We had a Pullman car. We didn't have no other way to travel. And we'd eat sandwiches and milk and hamburgers and salamis and cheese and stuff. After a while, that knocked me out, and I had to leave the band. I was gone. I was so thin. Of course, I've always been thin, but I was like a toothpick.
Doc was hospitalized and then took a few months off in Europe to recuperate. When he came back, he joined Teddy Wilson's big band, a letter-perfect band that did not last long, Doc once said, because it was too good for its day. Doc next joined old friend Benny Carter in Carter's band. But by the early 1940s, his health was still problematic, and he took a job in a military post office. By 1943, Doc joined a sextet led by pianist Eddie Haywood Jr., whose father, pianist Eddie Haywood Sr., he'd known in Atlanta. They played at the Cafe Society uptown, where Billie Holiday, Mary Lou Williams, and folk singer Josh White were on the bill. Their big hit was Cole Porter's Begin the Begin. The Eddie Haywood Jr. Sextet with Doc Cheatham on their hit tune, Begin the Begin. By 1945, the Haywood unit had broken up. With the decline of the big bands, Doc was ready for a new musical challenge. He found it in the Latin music that was very popular at the time. Here, he would also get a chance to solo. First, Doc joined the band of Marcelino Guerra.
Marcelino came from Cuba, and he came down to my studio, wanted me to teach him how to play trumpet. I tried to teach him, but he just didn't have it. He wanted to be a trumpet player. But he was a band leader and a good singer, a Latin singer. And I couldn't teach him. So he invited me to join his band at the Martinique as a third trumpet player, or as a soloist. He had his solo trumpet players. So I joined Marcelino Guerra's band. And I just played solos in there. And he liked me so much, he kept me in there.
The new rhythms were different from what Doc was used to. Solos in Latin music were based on these rhythms, rather than on the frequent chord changes of jazz and standards. but Doc brought along his library of tunes.
I just did the best I could. I played jazz. I played maybe a Muskrat Ramble on Sunday playing something else. I could hear what they're playing. I could hear the musical part of it. So I just played song jazz behind. That's what they wanted because they never heard that before.
But when Mario Bauza, former Cab Calloway trumpet player, took over the remnants of Marcelino's band, it was a different story.
I joined his band, and he fired me the same night because I couldn't understand his rhythm. He fired me. I could agree with him because I rehearsed it. I couldn't understand the beat of the Cuban Latin band.
But as always, Doc found a way to learn what he needed to know.
It was a little joint down on 110th Street and 5th Avenue, and they had bands from Puerto Rico, small groups in there that came over on the boats. But I joined this little group in there. They had all those rhythms that Machito had. And I stayed in that with those Latin bands, I don't know how many years, mostly on Saturdays. They have all kind of beautiful rhythm beats, music that I've never heard before in my life, but I learned.
Here is Doc Cheatham on 1010 Dale from Machito's classic album, Kenya. That was Doc Cheatham on 1010 Dale, recorded with Machito. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles, a celebration of the life and music of trumpeter Doc Cheatham. During these years, Doc also returned to another love, Dixieland music. On an African tour with Wilbur to Paris, Doc again had a chance to solo, and he liked it. By the mid-60s, when he himself was 60, he took a gig with a Benny Goodman quintet and found himself soloing on nearly every tune. It was at that point that he decided to refashion himself musically into a soloist and improviser. Phil Schaap was part of the process. Chuck Foles.
He asked Phil to come with him on his gigs, bring a tape recorder, tape him, let him take the tapes home and study them, and hone his playing down, edit himself into the soloist he wanted to become. And that's what he did. By the time I met him in 1972, he was already four or five years into that. He sounded to me like a very accomplished soloist, but he kept getting better and better and better. And there's no stopping him. Of all the trumpet players I've played with, I think Doc is the least predictable in where he's going to go in a solo. Doc has more different areas he likes to explore, and his style is more of a chameleon-like, maybe, more flexible than the average trumpet player's style, and maybe that's because he didn't develop it so early and then fall back on a lot of licks, which we all do, this part of the music.
One of the prime motivations in improvised music for a jazz musician is to be able to tell a story when we play a solo. And Doc is a master of that because you can hear all of his background, his influences from the Latin bands that he played with, his influences from Louis Armstrong, his hardships, all of the things that he went through in his life. You can hear that when he plays one note.
In 1993, at the age of 87, Doc Cheatham finally had a chance to go into the studio to record an album that celebrated his history and heritage and preserved his magnificent playing. Columbia's 87 Years of Doc Cheatham, produced by Phil Schaap, showed Doc off on many gems. The album brought together Doc's working unit, Doc Cheatham's New York Quartet, including Chuck Foles on piano, Bucky Calabrese on bass, and Jackie Williams on drums. One tune they recorded that day was Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight.
I think that's the loveliest version, at least by a trumpet player, the most beautiful horn playing I've ever heard on that song.
That was Doc Cheatham, featured on Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight. Doc also sang on his album. For years, he'd been playing behind singers, from Ma Rainey to Billie Holiday, to his old friend Maxine Sullivan, whom Doc accompanied on this 1983 recording of The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea.
I don't want you, but I hate to lose you. You've got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea.
The first thing that you have to do as an instrumentalist is to let the singer phrase the melody and stay out of the way. But Doc, in growing up in the era that he did and being able to play with people like Ma Rainey and playing in a big band setting with someone as great as Cab Calloway, you'll learn that naturally, because Cab Calloway will turn around and tell you, "You're in my way."
You've got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea.
After After doing it all, it seemed, holding sway as a lead man, playing for singers, and soloing himself, Doc decided to add his own voice to his performances. On at least one occasion, during a recording date in Paris in the mid-1970s, Doc's voice made its way onto a record, without his approval. He was doing a sound check for a date with Harlem pianist Sammy Price when the engineer asked him to sing a song.
So Sam said, "What are we going to play?" I said, "How about What Can I Say After I Say I'm Sorry?" And that's the old song that I learned in 1922. Sam knew it because he was as old as I. It had a beat to it.
What can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry? What can I do? Prove it to you, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. So how can I help it if I feel the way I do? I was all wrong, right or wrong, I don't blame you. Why should I take somebody like you and shame you? I know I made you cry, but I'm so sorry, dear. So what can I say, dear, after I say I'm sorry?
The second chorus, I just started out scatting. I said, and I did that on my own. And the engineer said, "Oh, that was wonderful." I said, No. I said, "Don't." I told Sam, "Man, don't think about recording that song. That was just a test for the engineers to adjust the thing." But they recorded it anyway, and it was on one of the biggest hits in Europe.
I like Doc singing because it conveys his personality. It's gentle, it's warm, but it has that steel in the middle of it. And that way he's a part of that strain in jazz that runs from Lester Young through Miles Davis, Billie Holiday, that kind of slow burning flame that will get you. You know, you get drawn into it by the sweetness of it, but then when you get in there, you find out that it's something, it's a lot of power in there.
Doc's singing has a certain joie de vivre. It's very uplifting. For me, it also contains a hint of pathos, a hint of sadness. And I think that's maybe the age of his voice, like an old wine. And that's sometimes what I hear when I hear Doc sing.
Was it a dream? Was it a dream? We made a vow beneath the pale moonlight.
On his 1993 album, Doc paid tribute to his old friend, Benny Carter. He played Benny's 1932 composition, Blues in My Heart.
Blues in My Heart unleashes a lot of emotion, all different kinds of emotion, some pent-up kinds of emotion. It all came out, seemed to come out in that performance.
Wynton Marsalis, Chuck Foles, and John Faddis.
Doc Cheatham would be remarkable at every age if you like music, because the power of his solos, they're not based on how old he is. It's what he's playing.
He lights up a room when he walks into it. He's one of those people that just makes you feel better being around. And I am very, very happy and proud to have known him all this time and played with him.
I feel very honored to have met Doc Cheatham, and I feel even more honored to have shared the stage with someone as humble and kind and gentle as he is, but also with someone who is as great as he is.
Where the sun sets in the sky, where flowers never die, and friends don't pass you by. That's my home. Where folks say, how do you do? And they really mean it too. And mama's love is true. That's my home. I'm always welcomed back whenever I roam. Just a little shack is my home, sweet home.
Our celebration of the life and music of trumpeter Doc Cheatham was written and produced by Sally Plaxton. Post-production engineer, Duke Marcos. We had assistance from Jim Luce, Terry Walker, and Ed Berger, Vincent Pelote, and Dan Morgenstern at the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Executive producers, Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. For more information about Jazz Profiles, this program, and a listing of future programs in the series, look for NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Support for this program comes from a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's Radio Program Fund, National Public Radio member stations, NPR, and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, saying jazz is as pure as the life we live. So live it. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
You've been listening to a celebration of the life and music of the late trumpeter, Doc Cheatham. Doc passed away in 1997. Discover more great jazz at NPR Music, including our new series, Live at the Village Vanguard, live webcasts and archives from America's premier jazz club. Check it out at nprmusic.org.